Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. Hey, man.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm great.
Who do you go by? Mick B? Mick Boogie? Mick? I don't even know how to pronounce your real last name.
My only last name. Batiski.
Batiski.
Yeah, Polish.
How does it feel to be Polish? Do you have Polish pride?
No. I get confused with, like, whenever I write Polish, I write Polish.
Mm.
Like nail
so
polish.
You don't even know how to write Polish.
Yeah, and my last name is Batyske, but originally it was an I. But when they moved here, like, a couple hundred years ago, they tried to get fancy.
Mm.
They tried to, like, be cool.
So like most immigrants, yeah.
So they dropped the I and made it an E, thinking it could, like, fake French.
Right.
And we're not. And we've just been.
Fooling anybody.
No,
what you're saying.
No,
your family never fooled.
It's
anybody.
A really odd thing. There's like no really. So there's like really no history for our name because it's like, and it's not even technically like a nationality.
Hmm. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That's an amazing way to start.
Everybody, that was Mick B. We're gonna get into that in a minute. But in case you guys are tuning in for the first time ever, this show is Innovation Crush. We cover all things. Ideas, creativity, smart people doing smart things, and today the buck does not stop. Why don't you tell a little bit of who you are? You know, a 90-second version of who Mick B, Mick Boogie, no I, no E, Polish.
Wow, we're throwing out all the old DJ names, and we gotta get my last name right. Say Batiski.
Batiski.
We got it. I'm grown up now. I am a human being that lives in Brooklyn, New York, originally from Ohio. Midwest, born and raised, and then kind of grew up and spread my wings and moved to New York to pursue my dreams. And first and foremost, I'm a DJ. I've had a very blessed career. Started in the dorm room at Two Crates of Records and ended up traveling the world DJing for any celeb, any brand, anything I ever really wanted to do. I've kind of been able to, like, figure that out.
Yeah.
I'm really appreciative of that. And now I'm using that to leverage, like, a whole other career and creativity and tech and innovation and angel investing and maybe one day a VC and maybe all sorts of really fun stuff that have all just like led as an offshoot of the creativity I had in DJing.
That's an interesting path, right?
Yeah,
it's not
yeah,
one
yeah.
you hear of very often. Like even when I wrote you down, I was like DJ / model / consultant /
I'm a virgin for this path.
But how does it like, you know, what was that natural progression? Because it, obviously it's natural for you,
but
it's not natural for most people. So what
no.
was that like?
It's funny because for me, that's how my mind has worked since the beginning. I didn't know that, though, until I kind of took a, like, look in the rearview mirror and kind of, like, analyzed my life. I self-taught myself to DJ just because I loved music, and I used it as a means to go to college. You know, I used it to make my college experience more culturally enriching.
So not get girls, I think.
I mean, I guess I got girls because I was a DJ. I don't know.
It was residual, but it wasn't.
I had a girlfriend all through college. I'm a commitment guy.
I had a girlfriend all through college.
But, and then I end up really trying to, like, take it seriously because I used it to pay for grad school. This is all in Ohio. And so it was just really a means to further my education and further my knowledge and further my professional growth. Then I finished that, and I decided I didn't want to grow up because who wants to?
Right.
And so from that point on, I said, let me just continue to DJ. And I kind of had a moment where I said, wow, I just finished grad school. I don't have any loans. All this kind of came from the DJ. This is just living in Cleveland, Ohio, by the way.
So you literally, like, paid college tuition from DJing?
Yeah, I paid my grad school from DJing. And
What did you think you were going to do? Because, like, if you go to grad school, again, that's not something you typically hear of from a DJ. And I'm using quotation marks.
Absolutely. You don't. I thought I was going to do – I mean, I had MBA in marketing, so I thought I was going to just do whatever marketing – creative things existed in the Midwest and the mid-aughts.
Right, right.
And then I finished that, and I was like, yo, I don't want to do this at all, because this is like this world we live in now, where everyone's a creative, and everyone's an entrepreneur, and everyone's a curator, and everyone's a storyteller, and everyone's a VC, and everyone's this, and there's social media and all this. Like, none of that stuff existed in 05 when I finished.
Right.
It was just, we were right on the cusp of all that being invented. So if you lived in Ohio, it was like, oh, we had GM, you know, we had like, I don't know, Goodyear. I don't know. I don't even know.
No,
there.
I grew up in Detroit. I worked at Chrysler out of college.
Yeah, like Cleveland Clinic. You know what I mean? There weren't a lot of like, we didn't have like the Apples and the Facebooks and the Googles and the Nikes and the Wieden and Kennedys and all of that there. So I said, let me stall. And let me just DJ for a year or two and figure this out. And from that point on, I just kind of like put all my eggs in one basket intellectually and used everything I learned in school, everything I knew just inherently, just being wired like how I'm wired, and was able to take my career from a couple years prior DJing in a dorm room to moving to New York City with no money, by the way. But it just like I just had enough relationships to pull it off. And that was and got married in that span of time too, and to a Detroit girl. So you know your city's great.
It's been good to you.
Yes, it's been great. It's been great to me. It's been very great to me. And we won't get into that.
I mean, we can turn the lights down and you can recall some stories if you want.
And then I moved to New York, and we can get into this more. But for me, it was kind of like, I realized the strength in what I do is not necessarily in the DJing aspect of it, but it's in masterminding my life and how I want it to go, and that's like kind of like my day job, because I've always managed my DJ career. I've never had like a team of people or people like putting me in all these like places. It's just it's been what I do from 8 to 6 every day is what allows me to go somewhere for 1 hour at night and do something to make everybody happy.
Right.
But that I could do with my eyes closed. I don't have to practice. I don't spend hours downloading the newest, you know, like I kind of can go anywhere and do a really good job. And I'm blessed with that ability. But what makes me tick is what I do in the daytime. And so now, and we can get into this, it's like,
what I want to do is put the DJing in perspective.
Yes.
Right.
Sure,
like
sure.
Where has this, like, it's taken you all around the world.
Yes.
You know, same song.
Yes.
All around.
Amazing.
The
one of my favorite songs of all time. First ever Tupac.
I was going to say, I used to clown around when I hung around with the underground.
Girls used to frown saying, damn, when I come around.
Gas me, and when they pass me, they used to diss me. Harass me, but now they ask me if they can kiss me.
Then he starts rapping really fast. And, and then he's like, and
people
then
change.
Shock G's like, why two?
Exactly. With or without the nose, Shock G. So anyway.
I know a girl who in Cleveland whose sister used to date him. Shock G. I wanted to know if like he wore the nose during those moments.
Well, what was the answer?
I didn't ask. I should have asked.
He said in the 69, his Humpty nose will tickle your rear. So,
you know, the next time I go back home, I'm going to find these people.
I'm out lyricing you. So your travels around the globe. Like, where have you gone? Dubai, Tokyo.
Everywhere.
For what? And what? Like, tell us about, you know, a day in the life of.
I mean, I've DJed every continent besides Africa, and I was going to do Africa, but I didn't really like the offering, and I think that was when they were having all sorts of like there was some outbreak or something. I was like,
some outbreak. Okay,
like, I'm
cool.
Good. We're trying to get pregnant. I'm good. And I didn't DJ and haven't DJed in Antarctica, but that's actually would be amazing for those four people there. I'd like to go
DJ
there
Spooky did
and give them an amazing party, all four of them.
Yeah, all four Antarcticans.
It'd be fantastic. But yeah, so I mean, I have done. You know, I mean, everything from, I did a VH1 tour in India. That was pretty eye-opening. I've done venues in Dubai, which I have a love-hate relationship with Dubai because it's like, it's nice, but it's really just like we're trying to just, it's like a dick contest with America.
Yes.
And it's like if
America. Which I lose most of them.
If America builds a building that's like, I'm making up a number, like a mile tall, Dubai's going to build one that's like a mile tall, but then they're going to put like an antenna on it.
It's like
just to be
like, olive
right,
at the top of the building.
Just some bullshit so they could be like, this is taller than your building. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, then that's not really. It's just like in the Guinness Book of World Records scheme of things, it's taller. So that's kind of what I always interpret when I go there. Been to Asia a bunch of times, go to Europe all the time.
And then, you know, like the clientele that you have like ranges from GQ to Twitter to Facebook to the White House. I mean,
right.
You know, you do, because there's a breaking point, right? There's a point at which you're like, okay, this is now it's really different than my college dorm room, right?
Yes.
So absolutely. What was that point where that inflection point where you're like, okay, like that was real, and I'm gonna keep going in that direction, especially with no sort of representation or no man. It's you,
right? It's me and my back in the day it was the T-Mobile Sidekick, and then it became the BlackBerry, and then the iPhone, and sometimes Samsung, depending on what I'm doing. you know, when I don't know when there was a tipping point per se, because I know every year tends to be better than the last, and I hope that continues perpetually. Yeah. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I think there was a moment, there were a couple things in my life where I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I used to do, the first gig where I really felt like I was like on to something, where like this is really happening. And it came out of my Cleveland roots. I used to DJ a lot at the Cavs games back when LeBron first started. In his first tour duty.
You got Cleveland. Powder all over your DJ setup?
No. I don't even know if he was doing powder back when he was a rookie. I think he just had to get, I think he had to really become like an all-star to start doing the powder.
I'm not very well versed in sports, but okay. Just so you know.
Well, I mean, basketball is like my favorite sport, so we won't talk about it. But I was able to leverage that relationship with those guys. They did and this is actually a very informative moment for how I run my career. They used to have these parties at All-Star Weekend. Him and Jay-Z would do these parties called Two Kings. And it was a party, just a big-ass party, one of the biggest parties of the weekend. Everybody came. But they would do these dinners before the party. And the dinner was like 200 people, and the dinner was like the people you or I would want to know. You know what I mean? It was like the CMOs and the CEOs and like all these awesome, intellectual, rich, wealthy, successful, aspirational people.
Right.
And the first year, I was never like, because I think the first year I did it for them, I was still in Cleveland, and then maybe I just moved to New York, but I was never like on the level of the guys they wanted for like the party, right? Because I wasn't like a funk flex or like those type of dudes at that time who just, they were known for that. So they would stick me in the dinner to DJ the dinner. And, you know, at first I was like, oh, I don't understand, you know, why? You know, then right. then I realized it was, like, the best blessing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's way better.
Because I didn't realize who was going to be at the dinner. I thought it was just going to be, like, some people eating dinner. And then when I looked around and I saw what it was, I was like, yo, this is totally my lane. Because my strength in DJing has always been relationships and been being intellectual while I play. It's never, you know, I could make a zillion people dance. That's very easy to me. But what gets me excited is, like, putting together things in that sort of way, in a cerebral sort of way. So I was like, oh, that's fantastic. So if I'm doing a room and no one has to dance, how can I be creative when there's not going to be that moment where everyone's dancing and moving and there's vibrations and all of that stuff? So I would be like, okay, if Jay-Z and his people are sitting over here, I'm not going to play like rap music at dinner. So I'm going to go and dig the samples that he sampled on all his stuff, and I'm going to put them together creatively so he can feel like he's in his zone without having to like hear his own records, right?
And this is like no consultation. This is just you kind of like...
This is just how my mind works.
Right, right, right.
And then I would start, as the dinner goes on, like incorporating hip-hop stuff. It would be like Tribe or like Dilla or like, you know, stuff like that's like vibey, not like turn-up music or whatever we called it back in that era. And it worked amazing, you know? And all these people from all over the world would come up to me at this event and be like, you're amazing. We want to work with you. You know, can you send me this playlist of what you just played and all that? So, you know, I just made a great amount of relationships for years. I did that dinner for like 3 or 4 years, I think, every year they had it. I don't think they don't do it anymore. And that to me told me something about myself. It was like, dude, like, you know, I'm not a fitness model. I'm not the world's most handsome guy. I'm not the richest guy. I'm not the best technical DJ. There's a lot of things I'm not, but what I am is like somebody that can really like just put shit together on a really cerebral level. And so I realized that that audience in that room is an audience that I can relate to beyond being behind the turntables.
Right.
And I was like, this is fantastic. So I was like, crafted real personal relationships out of those people, and not just in that room per se, but like rooms like that. Like it wasn't just that. It was a bunch of things like that.
Of course, like, but that's one example. That's your kind of your superpower is to. I never hear the term cerebral associated with DJing. Right. Yeah,
there's nothing about my career that's at all ordinary compared to like 99% of other DJs. That's the secret to my success. I think.
No, and it's funny because there's this idea that I believe in where some of the best innovation comes from constraint, right?
Yeah.
You got a small room, they're eating dinner, the music could be disruptive to, like, relationship building that they're doing. You're there at a point of service, you know, but also you have this intellectual aspiration to join join the rankings.
Right. That's very fair. Because in my mind, though, I was always that person. like I never even I realized when I go back and like looked at my life, I was never actually like I never thought of myself as a DJ, even though that was my means to do these things and still is to a lot of, in a lot of ways. I always thought of myself as no different than those people because I was educated and because I was well-read and because I was into all the same things that everyone else was into. I never lived my life the proverbial DJ entertainer sort of way. Right. I could care less. I don't go, if I'm not working, I don't go out. I like to go to bed at 10 o'clock. Yeah. I like to wake up at 6. You know, it's a different world for me. So I always completely identified with the people in that room and it was in rooms like that. And now moving forward to all the things I see you at all the time. Like, you know, it's the same kind of like mind state.
Yeah. So, I mean, what attracts you? You know, what's the thing that like gives you goosebumps when you, you know, whether in your, the craft you're known for or just outside of that, like, what's the thing that really gets you when you're like, you encounter it and you're like, okay, that I love that. Or I'm loving this conversation or this dialogue or this opportunity.
Oh man, so many things. I mean, we could talk from a DJ perspective. I could tell you that it's like there's a couple things that really get me juiced. It's when I think of creative ways to put songs together that haven't been put together in that way, like to the average person.
Right.
So for me, I did a lot. Used to do a lot with like wordplay. So if a song, I'll give you a good example. So if I was playing Beastie Boys and Q-Tip, Get It Together, which is like one of my favorite Beastie Boys songs. Like they say, the phone is ringing. Oh my God. So, like, I would, like, loop, like, the Oh My God, and then I would bring in, like, Tribe Oh My God under it, like, completely on beat, and then so there'd be, like, wordplay. Or if I was playing, you mentioned Shock G, if I played a Humpty Dance, and he says, just let me introduce myself, I would loop, introduce, just let me, I would loop, what are they? Allow let me to introduce me, yeah, and I would bring in Jay-Z, allow me to reintroduce myself, and people would go nuts. And, like, nobody was really doing the wordplay stuff.
Right.
But for me, I wasn't going to go up there and, like, out-scratch all these dudes. And I wasn't going to go up there and have more exclusives than, like, a Clue or those type of guys. And I wasn't going to be able to, you know, there's guys, especially, like those old-school house DJ guys, they could mix, like, four records at one time. They would have, like, four turntables. They would have these DJ booths that were huge.
Are you competitive at all? Because I get the sense, this is kind of how I operate, right? Like, I kind of look at the landscape and see who's doing what. And, like, same thing. Like, I know what I can and can't do. But right. I'm also like, ooh, nobody's thought to do this. But to me, it's like almost like a friendly competition to my peers, if you will.
I'm competitive in a way that I aspire to be successful. And when I see people who are either peers or just people that are just peripherally in my industry doing things that are great, it inspires me to do more and do better. I'm not competitive in like the actual like minutia, whatever that word is, because I'm the smart guy, right? I don't even know what that word is.
Minutia,
That word.
Minutia.
You have a bell? of technical DJing stuff. So, like, if I go to a party and this guy is just doing some scratch nobody's ever heard, and or if he's playing, like, some song, that like, some version of it that nobody's ever heard before, I'm not that guy. It's like, oh, my God, dude, what is the name of that scratch? How did you learn how to do that? Like, I don't care.
Right.
I probably cared, like, in college, like, when I was 18, and I used to go home, and I used to watch, like you know, X-Men and Scratch Pickle tapes and stuff like that. Like, I probably cared at that point.
Yeah.
But I just don't now. I respect it, obviously, a million times, but it's just, I'm not competitive in that way, you know. I'm competitive more so via inspiration of, like, oh, how did this guy pull this off? Like, in whether that's in DJing or whether it's in, like, any other business thing or just really in life, or even like when you see that really ugly guy with the really hot girl, you're like, yo, how did he pull that off?
That's me. That's yeah, you're looking at me while you're saying that.
You're a handsome gentleman, Chris.
No, it's interesting because you have this, like, it's almost like dissecting culture and dissecting things, right? You're an analytical person, if I can extrapolate a little bit.
Yeah.
How does that translate into your other endeavors? I know you've invested in a few startups. You still have the clothing store in
No. Okay. No, we sold that. I mean, I sold my interest back in that a long time ago.
Good, because it was in Ann Arbor anyway, and I went to Michigan State, so I was glad that that's no longer yours.
I believe it's still doing well, though. But that actually was interesting because that was the first thing I ever was like I tried to do outside of like DJing and to have a minority ownership and something like that. And it was like people started treating you different, which I thought was really fascinating. I was in Cleveland at the time, but it was like, oh, you're DJing, but oh wait, you have that? That's cool. Like you're not just like staying at home all day, like playing video games, whatever, right. whatever people do. And so
whatever DJs do during the day,
I think subconsciously, I mean, what I did during the day was go to school, but like, I think subconsciously that inspired me to start wanting to create all these other things outside of DJing. Also, my grandparents were very entrepreneurial. I didn't realize, you know, nobody knew it. Entrepreneur meant when we were growing up. It wasn't like, it might have been, they might have had that magazine at the time, but like, it wasn't right. like a buzzword, right? right? And nobody failed.
It's jargon. Like, it's reached the point of jargon. Like, yeah. innovation. Like, I'm right. guilty of it in, you know, my own show. Like, there's these words that.
Right. Yeah. There's so many of them. And they've been there since the beginning of time. And people didn't just fail fast. People just failed and they were just like, fucked. You know, like, it wasn't exactly. celebrated. You were just broke.
Shoot the horse.
Like, it was nobody cared. Nobody was like, oh, it's so awesome how you failed. You leaned in and you failed so bad. Nobody cared. You just, like, my dad had three floor covering tile businesses and they all failed. And nobody was there to, like, Sheryl Sandberg him and be like, that was amazing. Like, this did not
you
happen.
You failed awesomely.
You failed amazingly.
Good job.
Fail whale and all that stuff. But my grandpa had a drugstore, and he actually did really well. And I didn't know at the time that, like, watching him run these businesses was inspiring to me. And then he, when I was in seventh grade, gave me my first job. So I never really had, like, the kid kind of, like, I mean, I was obviously, I had plenty of time to be a kid too, but
right.
I was also like after school going and working, and on Sundays working. So my free time was cut very finite, and it was just like work, work, work. But I was working with family, and it was an awesome time. It was probably one of my happiest times of my life, even though like, my life is very happy.
Yeah.
And that inspired me to always work really hard, but I didn't realize that at the time that that's what it was inspiring me, because I was a kid. And then you realize like your whole life, that was the last time I had a real job, dude. Like that.
Wow.
When I graduated college, when I graduated high school and I went away to college, that I never had. Like, I worked in a library. That was like, I think I did that. That didn't count.
Like, shh. Were you the official husher?
No. Shh. I. You know what I used to do was they would everybody would just like, you know, they would put. I worked at the thing where people would bring their books when they were done looking at stuff, and you'd have to go put them back up on the shelf.
You were a cart pusher.
Yeah, okay, and guy. I would just go to a different part of the library and stick them on some other shelf, like somebody just finished them and put them somewhere else. So I didn't.
I find it's funny. I find like a lot of really like high functioning creative people jobs that they had, they just totally like bullshitted their way through.
Yeah, I didn't care.
Yeah,
I didn't care.
So a couple of startups. I know Local Lure is one. Like, yeah. What are some other things that you've been involved
in? We have
in,
Local Lure, which is a really great travel app, and what we try to do is. You know, the whole, like, Yelp thing is kind of, like, annoying when you go to places and you never really know what to believe and who bought this review and all those things. And we're like when I go places, and I'm sure it is when you go places too, I don't want to eat at whatever everybody eats at, and I don't want to stay where everybody stays. And I want to kind of, like, have my own kind of, like, vibe.
Right.
Similar to things that I like and people like me like. And so we kind of figured out a way to have locals curate these experiences for you. Whether it's in food, whether it's in entertainment, and you can truly go to any place. And, you know, like if somebody comes to L.A., right? Like if you showed me your L.A., it would be a lot better in one day than what I would figure out on my own. I come out here all the time now, so like I kind of get it. But I used to only come out here twice a year, and I hated it because I didn't know it.
Right.
And I didn't understand it. And I was like, holy shit, if I have to walk down Hollywood Boulevard one more time, see Spider-Man, this blows. And now I'm like, oh, this is great. I go to all these places, and I have friends out here, and I have a great time. So that's what we kind of strive to give people the experience of in multiple cities or around, you know, the globe. And so it's going really, really well. And we have a partnership with JetBlue and some other stuff in the works, which is really cool. And have another company that I'm part of called .. And it was the first investment I ever did. And it was originally a really, really bad photo app called Stublisher. And then it became a really bad diary.
So it's also
app.
A bad name.
Yeah, it was a bad name. and then it became a really bad diary app called DM, maybe? Goes down in a DM,
it does go
but
down
it was like
DM.
DIEM.
It goes down on Stublisher, too.
It does, and that's why they all failed. And but the kid who started it, Kyle, his name's Kyle, genius. Like Zuckerberg-level genius, in mm-hmm. my opinion. And I was just like, you're a winner. So they figured out, finally, that their strength wasn't necessarily making these apps, but it was like, oh, we have like, they're like, oh, we can do all these other things. So they started doing all this really amazing experiential VR 3D tech stuff. So now they're doing stuff with like Mountain Dew and Complex and HTC. And they just did a big presentation actually at CES with HTC. So much amazing stuff that they're doing. Right. Adidas, Nike, you name it. And it just took them a while to figure it out.
What was that like? What was that? What was the time where you met them and you thought Kyle was smart and interesting, and the time that like they figured it out?
3-4 years.
Oh wow, okay,
it's a long time.
I mean, it's patience on your side. Like, and at what point were you like, I'm investing, like I'm putting capital into this, or were you just like kind of along for the ride and consulting and advising? Because I know that's part of your
repertoire, I put money in, but I also enjoyed kind of like being along for the ride and helping too and giving insight and giving thoughts. And I thought they were actually very receptive to listening also, not just to me, but other people involved. And it was pretty nice to be heard. And, I was able to use some of my relationships to open some doors for them. And then, you know, ironically now, as life comes full circle, they're actually able to use their relationships to open up doors for me. So they've actually booked me enough DJ gigs through their relationships that it actually paid for my investment back.
Wow.
Which is crazy, right?
That is crazy.
And Ben, I didn't know that was going to happen when I did it. I was like, it was just like in my life, and this is what's amazing about how my life is going now and why I love it so much. When I started doing all that stuff, this was at the end of like the Mick Boogie era of my DJ career, where I was like, I can't be this Mick Boogie like DJ character for the rest of my life. It's not really believable. I don't want to be like a 62-year-old dude. You know, and then I was starting to like branch out and do like talk on panels and do things like that. And I had like this moment where I'm on a panel with all these people with these really important like names. And then it was like, and Mick Boogie. And it was just like, instantly like the credibility in like the audience changed.
Right.
So that was embarrassing to me, because all of a sudden what I was saying, I could have been curing cancer, but nobody really would have taken it seriously, because I was coming from this like rap name. Yeah. Right. And the thing was like with me was like, I always had a career that if you knew the world, you knew me, but I wasn't like a household name at all. It's like, yeah. I wasn't like a Flex or like a Jazzy Jeff or like a Kid Capri or a Clue or Drum or like these people that are like, they have the first name recognition. Right. So if you have an iconic legendary name in music, you should keep it, you know, because you have that, you'll have that forever. I didn't have that. So for me, holding on to a name didn't have that sort of like cachet, didn't really make any sense. So I just kind of did a rebrand on it. And so I just DJing as Mick, one word, all caps. Thankfully, it was, no, there's not a lot of Mick in the world. And then for like business stuff,
yeah, the fact that you have Mick.co and like, didn't your like Twitter or your Instagram handle
like,
is Mick.
Yeah. It just works. It works really well. And so, yeah, so all of that kind of like feeds into everything that we're saying. And, did I answer your question?
I have no idea. Well, when I listen back, I'll be like, nope.
Edit that shit.
No, that's perfect sense. So, interesting thought. I mean, you know, you have this professional journey, and you're obviously very cerebral in how you craft your own career.
Yeah.
When we had lunch last, you ordered this very particular...
We laughed a lot.
Yes, we did laugh a lot. You said some things that were super inappropriate.
thank you.
You're welcome. No, thank you. But... you ordered this salad, and it was like you got very particular about how you ordered the salad.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, I used to be fat. Tell us about Fat Mick.
Fat Mick was fun. Fat Mick was really
and
fun.
And the transition. That's what I really want to get into. But, you know.
Fat Mick was happy, man. He didn't have any cares. He didn't have any bills. He didn't have any kids. Like, he just was like, you know. It's funny, man, when I realize in retrospect, like, this is in Ohio. When I was really, really, really fat. And I dressed really, really bad. Yet I had like amazing girls that wanted to like do like, we'll call them dates.
They wanted to see me.
And I'm just like, I thought I was like amazing. I was like, I'm amazing. Then I realized like in retrospect that I was being used, because they weren't actually, obviously, there's no way they were physically attracted to me, because I was just so out of where they were at physically.
Now, what's fat? Like, by comparison to now?
Like 100 pounds more.
Okay, all
like,
right.
It's yeah, like 280.
That's fat.
270, 280.
That qualifies.
Yeah, like 80, 90 pounds more. And so then I realized that I was actually like, you know, it was like the girls that would just date people because they have like status, whatever. I mean, whatever status I had in Cleveland, I don't think it was like status. But it was just interesting because in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm loved.
Right, right.
I was like, no, dude, I was just on the radio 5 days a week and I gave him concert tickets. Like, I think that's really what it was. So it was interesting coming to terms with that. But yeah, like, you know, I made a focus in my life to kind of get my health together. And I also, that changed my career in a lot of ways too. And nobody, like, why would, for example, like a GQ hire me to show up in an event and DJ for a bunch of people in $6,000 tuxes if I can't fit in them?
Right.
And I don't look nice in them. I wouldn't hire me.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that at the time, but it's common sense for marketing.
Right. So, speaking of your health, how long ago was that? Like, how long ago did you actually lose?
It was between 05. It was a process. It started like maybe like, no. It started like 06, and then it finished around, I moved to New York in 08, and I moved to New York around, let's see, I was 275 in Cleveland. Then we got to New York, I was like 242. So maybe that was, and then a couple years in New York, I got it down to like, now I'm like 200, 195.
Nice. You look great.
You know. You're a beautiful man. I had a lot of pizza.
The reason I was asking, because I want to do the opposite. I want to see how long it'll take me to gain 100 pounds.
To gain 100 pounds?
So
very easy. Lots of ice cream.
No, but, you know, I think, all you know, speaking of, like, this idea of focus and, you know, focusing on your career, focusing on the path you want to go, mm-hmm. focusing on your health, and in the midst of a very vigorous travel schedule, you know. Yeah. Every time I talk to you, you're somewhere else.
I don't even realize it, dude. Like, the first 12 days of this year, I was gone for like 10 of them, or at least parts of 10 of them.
Right.
And then I'm home for like a day or half of a day in the middle of these things. So in my mind, I'm like home all the time, and you know, and I like, and I, but I'm not. And then I looked at my schedule, and I'm just like, and nothing, and I'm getting like nothing done. And like my kids, like my son's like a year and a half, and he's just like, what's up? And I'm just like, yeah. I don't realize that it's that. Because I'm in it, and then sometimes I have to sit back and like look at it, and I'm like, this is nuts.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, how do you balance that out, especially being a family man, especially just your own self, right? There's something to be like, it could drive you crazy just to be wake up in a different city every few days. But like, what is your like your key to your own personal balance in the midst of it all?
A couple things. One, I'm fortunate to be able to do this for a living. I'm fortunate that when I'm DJing, that it's enabling me to like go to that. So when I'm saying I'm gone, it's not like I'm gone. Like, there was a point in my time in my life where if I was gone for 4 days out of the week, it would be like I was doing a club in, I'm making this up, Miami, a club in San Diego, a club in Chicago, and a club in Nashville. I'm just making up random cities. So there wasn't.
Well, those are real cities.
Just yes, but I'm making up an example.
Oh, okay. So, I thought you'd be like, yeah, then I was in Johnsonville.
I mean, there's some fake cities, too, that we've all been
to. That's true.
There was a city out, a nationally known city I went to, and I asked a guy for a salad. This was last year. This was like November. And he was like, salad, huh? He's like, lettuce, huh? It's like, I might have a tomato.
Like, where? What?
And that was the last time I was in Memphis. But it was a good tomato.
You can only eat pig.
It was a very good tomato. I should have just ordered barbecue and just kept it moving. But I've never asked for salad again in Memphis. But that's a real story. But to your question, at that time it was kind of like, all right, it was very transactional. I was like, I'm show up here, DJ, show up here, DJ, show up. You know, now the quality of what I'm able to be a part of is such a high level quality most of the time intellectually. So it's like when I say I'm gone, okay, it was like I was gone because I was at CES for a few days doing a bunch of events and hanging with people like yourself and really fulfilling all sorts of attributes and goals within me, as well as DJing a lot. And so it wasn't just purely like transactional. So I was really, it was fulfilling to me. So I don't mind being gone for 2 or 3 days at a time, because not only am I bringing home money to my family, but I'm enriching my brain. I'm enriching my relationships. I'm building for the future. I'm learning things, and it's feeding me as well as feeding my wallet. And it's a lot easier to be gone from your family when you're bringing home so much more than just money. Because if I was just trying to bring home money, I could just do that in New York, or I could just like go get a regular job or whatever. You know.
Did you find that you paid more attention to that once you had a child? Marriage is one thing, but I think once you have a kid, you really start paying attention to what you're bringing home. And I'm using quotation marks again.
Yeah. Air quotes. You have to make a lot more money when you have a kid. At least you try to.
Basics, yeah, exactly.
Because they're expensive. I mean, shit, he just had an interview for 2-year-old preschool, and he's a year and a half. And like, what? Really?
Exactly.
Like, it's just like, and the cost is insane. And I'm like, but you got to do it. Because right. If you don't, then you don't get into the good 3-year-old preschool. And then you don't get into the good 4-year-old preschool.
Then you just
and
then fail you're just at life.
Fucked for kindergarten.
Yes.
And it's just like, and then you're never going to get to Harvard because you didn't go to the 2-year-old preschool. This is what they told me.
Exactly.
So, and I drank the Kool-Aid. But yes, to your point, I am much more focused post-baby. All of these great kind of like other things started blossoming in my life right around the time we were trying to have the baby. And it all kind of created a focus around the same, just the same kind of like visions and goals and morals. And it's much easier for me to go and just bust my ass and just do everything I need to do because I'm not doing it for me anymore.
Right.
I'm doing it for him. And if I know if I'm doing it for him and he's good, then I'm by default good.
Yeah.
And it's like the opportunities now that come, I feel like, because I'm putting this energy out there, and I never had a selfish energy, but if there was any selfish energy, that's gone.
Right.
Because it's all about him now. And so I feel like putting that out there has just really been so beneficial to me as well, because it's not about me at all.
I got goosebumps. And that is real talk, because I, you know.
You get it. You understand it 100%. More than
anybody. No, that's why, you know, I was asking. You know, I have 2 kids. I have an 11-year-old and a 4-year-old. So I'm like, I want to bring them experiences, knowledge, insight, and, you know, especially if my time is short, right? Like it's – or shortened. Because I'm away on these intellectual journeys and doing stuff and drink until 4 a.m. As we come to a close, I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
First, the show is called Innovation Crush. What is your current innovation crush? You've been around the world a few times. I'm going to keep singing the whole episode. But anyway, what is your innovation crush?
Like in which way would you?
Whatever, like it can be culinary, it can be technology wise, it can be a person you know or you met. Like, what is the thing that's really like giving you goosebumps and getting you excited right now?
What's really getting me excited right now, actually, is I love what's inspired me in the last couple of years to really shift my career is watching people laterally move from like one thing and turn that into like when I see like a Gary Vee or like a Tim Ferriss or those type of guys who started off as like a wine guy or a health guy, and they kind of become like they're able to take one small thing and take the process behind that and apply it to a bunch of different things and have success in that.
Right.
That inspires me so much. It inspires me more than any song, any DJ, any sneaker, maybe not sneaker because I love shoes, but like
you
I
see
like.
These? You see these?
What do you got? I don't even know what you're
wearing. Oh, over here.
What are those?
I have no idea. Yeah. you don't like them. That's fine. Let's keep going.
That's scary. So when I find people who are able to just truly take one thing and apply it across different things and have success and help lots of people using a skill set that they thought was finite. That gets me really juiced, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do now, and that's kind of like I spend a lot of my time thinking about that. It's probably too much of my time thinking about that. I actually realize I spend 80% of my time thinking of that, and 20% of my time thinking about music stuff, which is funny because my income is still like 80% music stuff, 20% other stuff. But my inspiration, what gets me juiced, is the other stuff.
Well, it's like you're in some ways on autopilot on the DJ stuff, right? And
right.
Like the stuff that's exciting you. And I, you know, that was one of the things I was going to ask you, at least in the ventures that you've taken outside of the music world, you know, what have you seen from whether it's like analyzing a crowd or matching beats or wordplay that, you know, some of those principles that apply to your more entrepreneurial, you know, endeavors?
Oh, that's a great question. A lot of things. Like, first of all, I mean, this is something actually I'm working on. I've been doing a lot of speaking, which is like something that really juices me up to like do. And I'm not amazing at it, but one day I will be. And so this year is kind of like a goal to like do it as much as I can for as many things, all your listeners. So one day somebody from TED will call me. But I think there's a thought process of how a DJ mind works that, and I don't know if we talked about this at all when we had lunch, that if you're good at what you do and you're cerebral at what you do, you're thinking about, let's distill down what DJing is at the basis of it. It's not scratching, it's not mixing, it's not all these things. It's song selection and it's audience engagement. So it's me giving you a message, putting it together in a way that makes people from all walks of life in a huge multiple of, you know, a crowd, all do whatever I want you to do at the same time. So how is that any different than a guy creating an ad campaign?
Yeah.
Or a guy giving a motivational speech, or a guy creating a product for a huge swath of people? It's not, you know, it's the same mind state. It's the same thought process. It's the same ideology. And that, to me, when I realized that on a really high level, there's something that's something I'm really excited to build out, because I think that there's a way I can really help people. I can help brands. I can help just marketing people, creative people, anybody, because I see things slightly different than how they see it. And I might not be 100% right all the time, but, you know, I've been in rooms where people are all standing around and nobody cares and people are in a bad mood and ready to go. And I could take the same 10. I've been in rooms where the DJ before me played 10 songs in a row and nobody cared. And I could go and take those same 10 songs, play them in a different order, play 1 minute of this song, 3 minutes of that song, 2 minutes of this song, like just completely recompose how that the same, you know, and it'll change. Oh, I just broke your mic. It'll change the whole, it'll change the whole vibe of the room. It'll change the whole situation because of that. And that, to me, I was like, wow, that's fantastic, you know. And so that's how my mind works. And that's how I apply my mind into everything I do.
Yeah, it's moving crowds. It's orchestrating the right bits and pieces to, you know, to create a mass movement of sorts.
Right. And I don't think DJs think like that. You know, I think they think about, like, which girl is coming home.
I think they think about it, but they don't think about it on a macro level like you've done. Because, you know, I early on, I had a DJ company, and, like, I was an MC. Don't worry about it. I'll spare you the details. But that was one of the things. It was like my you know, he's still my best friend to this day, you know, was always, like, constantly analyzing who was doing what and why in response to what he was playing, right? And then it became this whole, it's almost like a game in some ways. You know, you're trying to, it's like a puzzle piece, right? You're trying to figure out where it goes and where to place it and how to make it, make a whole picture. All right, the metaphor got out of hand.
Let me, just because I know you'll appreciate this story. So when I first figured out I had the ability to move a crowd, for lack of a better word, I used to work for a radio station in Cleveland, like the rap station that was in Cleveland, and you'd have to go to all sorts of random stuff you didn't want to DJ because it was just like part of your requirement of your job. So they would send me to this skating rink, like roller skating rink for like high school kids. This was probably like 2003, 2004. Pre-Serato too, so I had to haul all the records in there. And it was like right when No Limit was really big and all that stuff. And I realized very quickly three things. One, the money was not worth my time being there. Two, I couldn't stand being there in the first place. This is like I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it at all. And but I couldn't not go because I'd lose my job. So I realized if I played certain amounts of records, like in a certain way, like I was just describing to you, I could create melees. Wow. And then the party would just be over. So very quickly, I figured this out. So if I had played three, this is when like Master P, down from my whatever, the word I can't say.
You can say it.
I'd just die.
Right.
And my wife and my son would leave. So, you know, if I played all of those songs like three times in a row, started them over and played like about it and all, like these kids would take their roller skates off and swing them around and just like beat the shit out of each other. And I was like, this is great. So I would DJ for like, if the gig was 4 hours, I would do like 90 minutes, 2 hours. I'd give them some work. I'd put in some time, you know, enough to do, say I did something. And then I'd be like, all right, well, I think ER is coming on at 10. You know, this is, you know, I used to have a George Clooney Caesar. So I wanted to go home and watch it.
That is funny.
So I could learn. I'll send you some pictures. Oh, yeah, I was the man. And it was fantastic. Leather jacket was really bad. And so I would just play those songs. People would just start like beating the shit out of each other with skates, and I'd go home.
So yeah, that's a lot of power. I mean, that's a tremendous, just career wise,
eye opening, dude. One day, I swear to you, like when someone says like, oh my, like when I'm 50 or I'm 60, and people are like, oh my god, how did you just do this? I'm gonna be, because I was at that roller skating rink
and I played some Master P, and these kids almost died.
I don't. I hope they're alive. You know, but. Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see. We should go back there and just like you should do like a little mini documentary.
One day, I will call it Skatehead.
Like all the people who got hit in the head.
But I mean, think about that, right? Like that's crazy. I didn't realize that was actually really. It was, they always say like work smarter, not harder, right? That was what that was. I just didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
You weren't thinking I was going there.
No, I never know where these things go, especially with you. So last but not least, complete this phrase for me.
Sure.
Innovation to me is.
Oh, I was waiting to see.
That's the phrase to complete.
Innovation to me is.
Don't say minutia.
No, yeah, I can't. Innovation to me is taking. It's actually awesome because it's kind of like the roots of like of hip hop culture, right? It's taking things that already exist, that everybody already knows, and putting them together in a different way to create something totally new, and totally groundbreaking, and totally. Inspirational to some, aspirational to others, and just, you know, you can continue to build on it. It's the roots of what made me love music. I got into hip-hop because I couldn't afford all these genres of music to buy and, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, hip-hop at that time was the one genre of music that took all genres of music and it made it one. So if you listen to, like, early 90s hip-hop, I mean, they would sample. You'd have a song that sampled, like, John Coltrane, the Beatles, and George Clinton all in the same song. So I got... three genres of music
right.
for like a dollar. Like it was like it was a really good bang for my buck. It was very innovative. We didn't think about it at the time. We just thought it sounded cool. And it, but it, it just it just it created it created it created from things that already existed. And so to me, when I you know that's what it is to me.
That's awesome. Especially like you know, and also think being in the Midwest. Like I you know grew up in Detroit, especially mm-hmm. like in the let's call it the golden era of hip hop. But I felt like. When the New York or the East Coast West Coast beef was happening, like I was grateful that I got all got the best sides. Of both worlds. Mm-hmm. You know, we got Biggie as much as we got Tupac, as much as we got you know Outkast. Right? It was just we got a little bit of everything, as opposed to like being a strict New York mentality. You know, headphone based kind of you know movement.
It was the same in Ohio too. You got the best of all worlds, and that's what shaped me. And I think it shaped you, and I think it shaped some of the really unique sounds, especially that came out of your city.
Oh yeah. Because
you could argue, like, I mean, if you had to choose a coast for Dilla, you would choose East proverbially. But there was so much West Coast bounce in it too.
Right.
And so he was truly a product of all of his environment. It's awesome. We're lucky to be from there.
We are. Where can people find out more about you? Mick.co.
Yes.
What's all the handles?
Mick.co. My Instagram is @Mick. That's M-I-C-K. Sometimes people still forget the K. I don't know why.
I sent somebody your website today, or I was talking to them, and they typed in M-I-C.co.
It's Mike.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. I was like, that's Mike. What's wrong with you?
In the Twitter, as I am Mick, because I couldn't get the guy who has Mick. You should look him up. He has a really cool beard. He works, I think, for like Yammer or something in San Fran. We've become like friends because we have the same name. He tried to sell me some shoes. He's like, I got these Jordans. They're blue. I'm like, yo, if I buy him, will you give me the name?
But it's not a bad deal.
Didn't happen.
Plus
but
you
yeah,
have to port over all your follow. It'd be a mess.
Yeah, I think ultimately I'm going to change the Twitter to Mick Batiski, but nobody will know how to spell it. But yeah, I am Mick on Twitter, @Mick on Instagram. And the easiest thing is just Mick.co. It's all linked through there. All
right. Yeah. What was the last book you read?
Ooh, the last book I read. I just finished this book about what is it called? It was a book about different brands and how they use storytelling, which is another buzzy word, but. And it kind of, and I don't remember the name of it, but I just read it because we just went to Paris for my wife's birthday. But it was pretty great.
You just got to throw that in. That had nothing to do with this. We went to Paris for my wife's birthday. But thank you for coming
by.
And
now I'm broke.
Hey, everybody. This has been another installment of Innovation Crush. We will talk to you next time.
If you're looking for another show to listen to, head over to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I've been hosting Storyworthy for 7 years. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I love storytelling, and I love hearing about other people's lives, their successes, their failures. And since I have so many comedians on Storyworthy, like Todd Glass and Dana Gould, these stories are often really funny. You should listen to the recent episode with comedian and actor Dave Koechner talking about his high school reunion. I'll tell you this, it ends up with Dave waking up with blood on his pillow. So yeah, it's pretty intriguing. Plus, I tell my own true stories every month too, like my recent episode called I Went to the Middle East with Yakov Smirnoff. Guess what it's about? Yeah, exactly. The Middle East and Yakov Smirnoff. So put Storyworthy in your listening queue. I know you're going to love it.